Since the remote participants might not be able to see this, let me just describe what's happening in the room. Everybody, almost everybody, is ignoring my authority.
I'm sorry, Thomas, in order for us to ignore your authority, you actually need to have authority in the first place.
Didn't we have that same discussion in, Chris, didn't we have that same exchange in Istanbul or Paris or where that was?
Thomas, I support you. I think we need to be more disciplined about sticking to the agenda, so I support any efforts on your part to bring that about.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. So just to put things into context, let me introduce this next these next couple of agenda items that we have. And that is also an attempt to address, again, what Mike Silber said earlier. This morning, we tried to do a couple of things. We tried to establish what the requirements for a work are, or to remind the group of what the requirements of this of our work are. Then we tried to capture what our preliminary assessment of areas of support, i.e. consensus, are versus areas that need more work and areas where we have divergence. We then tried to understand better what the underlying concerns with the board were, because to us it wasn't as clear for the board's position as it was with the other commenters. And now the section that sort of looked like we were giving too much attention to the board's view is over. We're now going through the individual areas of our recommendations and discuss these. We're discussing all community input, including the board's input. And we will try to resolve the issues, we will try to address the concerns by improving the recommendations that we have in our report. And at the end of this day, we will revisit the list of support, divergence, and more work to be done to see whether we can maybe move one item that was on the left-hand, on the right-hand column to the consensus column. So let's try to firm up the consensus in the group and identify more clearly what work needs to be done in what area. So that's the plan. We're now going to have the rapporteurs with us for this very section. It's Jordan Carter. We will later hear Cheryl and Steve, and we'll have Becky joining remotely to speak to the sections that she and her team were responsible for. And what we're going to do is we're going to have the rapporteurs introduce their understanding of the community feedback. We're going to discuss it, and we're going to then confirm with Bernie Turcotte. I'm not sure whether where he is in this room. He's sitting over there, but he is our Dragon Master of the public comment tool number two. So he has been working on all the comments, and he will be the person that we will double check with whether we have actually addressed the community concerns adequately or whether we've forgotten something. And if you think we've forgotten something important, also please do let us know. And again, if you think we have areas in our report that we can put in for later, for Workstream 2 or ATRT number 3 or whatever it might be called, please do speak up. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Jordan to introduce us to the first community panel.
Thanks, Thomas. I'm thinking you're talking about the budget. Is that right?
That's a good one to start with.
Okay. We're going to start with the budget strategic plan, operating plan veto, because it's got the most contention, so it seems sensible to start with that. I just wanted to open with a couple of intro comments, I guess. The first is that we were kicking around the idea of possibly separating these powers and saying, keeping the discussion about the budget as maybe needing to be separately described for a number of reasons. First of all, because there's a timeliness with financial decisions that doesn't apply so much to strategic plans. You can have a very long debate about your strategy if you like, but there is a reality of the start and end of a financial year that means you need to be a bit more tight on timing for that. The second point is that there does seem to have been a bit of a misapprehension that's crept in. There's a lot of similarity between what the board has proposed for the budget thing in its comments and what the CCWG has proposed. Both of the proposals, or both of those sets of comments propose that there should be a limit to the number of times a budget can be vetoed. The difference is that the board has said that in the event of a second disagreement, there can be a budget presented that's up to 10% higher, a kind of contingency in case something bad has happened to require further spending. And that was contemplated by the CCWG, and it just wasn't put in the proposal, not because people didn't think it was a good idea or because people thought it was a bad idea that they didn't want there, but just because it didn't seem necessary. So I think Working Party One certainly is entirely open to the idea of a contingency permission where there's been a couple of disagreements. And there isn't a big difference, I don't think, between saying it's last year's budget that continues or that it's a holding budget that continues with a higher contingency. The difference then becomes, you know, I'll stay away from the model difference, which is, you know, in the board's MEM alternative, the board makes the final call, and the membership model, the member makes the final call. That isn't so relevant for this. The other thing I just wanted to mention is to clarify a little bit about why there's a separate process dealing with the PTI or IANA budget. There's been some concern that's come back to us, particularly from the more technical parts of the community, that an ICANN budget veto must not disrupt the resourcing available to the IANA functions. The IANA functions are at the core of this. They need to be operated effectively at all times. And what we tried to be clear about, but as in so many areas of the report, the wording might not quite have done that justice, is by separating the two vetoes, you're saying that whatever happens to the ICANN budget, the IANA budget is protected. So if there is no veto of the IANA budget, it will carry on. It should be seen as the sort of first call on ICANN's financial resources, if you like. I know that the CWG discussed ideas like holding a couple of years' funds in escrow or something to make sure there's an absolutely cast-iron guarantee of resourcing available for those functions. So I just wanted to be clear that underpinning the proposal is that absolute clarity. Even though PTI is funded by ICANN, you have to think about this as a kind of clear slice of the revenue that's available to ICANN going to PTI or IANA, and that will be ring-fenced, and any community disagreement about the broad ICANN budget should not and will not affect that. And it could have the same contingency if it was vetoed a number of times by the community, have a last year plus 10% limit on it. So that would provide assurance, because I'm pretty sure that if there's a problem in IANA, if people are getting very angry about it spending too much, that's one thing. But if they're getting very angry about it not being able to do its job, that's a more serious problem to avoid. So having a contingency that raises the threshold is all right. So I guess in summary, you know, people were concerned about the operational impact of having any budget dispute. There's not a lot of difference between what the board has come back with and what the CCWG was intending. So I think that's kind of the scene setter, Thomas, for that particular community power. And it'd be interesting to see what people have got to say about it.
Thanks very much, Jordan. Before we open up the discussion, let me just try to capture what we've heard and maybe add one point to it. First, do you think it's a good idea to separate the community power and budget operating plan and strategic plan? We haven't seen any pushback or almost no pushback on operating plan and strategic plan. So why not separate those and concentrate on fixing the budget issues? Okay, I see a lot of nodding. You should make yourself heard if you object to this, because then I suggest we take stock of this and say we separate out the two of them. Then, and I think that's a point, Jordan, that you haven't made clear, is that was also a request. Let's hard code the mandatory consultation process into the escalation path. Let's make sure that we reduce the risk of friction up front and thereby decrease chances of friction at a later point. Okay? So that's the second point, and I see that Shireen wants to talk. I'll get to you in a moment. The third point then would be, let's be clear that PTI is separate, and let us know if if we need to do something about PTI or whether we are sufficiently clear that there is no risk for the PTI budget. Question. If we don't hear from you, we assume it's good to go on an as-is basis. There was a no, but yeah, please make yourself heard. Get in the queue. And the fourth point, Jordan, I think you wanted to offer is also hard code plus 10%. You know, take on board the board suggestion and say, okay, we don't remain on the last year's level, but we add these 10% because the bigger fear is that there is not sufficient money rather than excessive expenditure. So I guess these are the four takeaways that I would offer. And there's a queue forming. Shireen, you're the first to speak.
Now, just a reminder that there's, in the operating plan, there is an annual operating plan that is consistent with the annual budget. So you cannot separate those when we talk about veto powers. So in your recommendation about the operating plan, you have to separate the long-term one, which is attached to the strategic plan, and the annual one, which is attached to the budget.
I see no hands. George.
Thank you, Thomas. First, a comment on your last point about speak up now. It's difficult in a room of 100 people that everybody can speak, so I think you should assume that silence doesn't necessarily mean assent. 2 points. First of all, you have an ICANN budget and you have an IANA budget. And for the purposes of the transition, the IANA budget is really important. That has to be preserved at all costs. I don't quite understand why one puts controls on the entire ICANN budget when it does not really affect the transition, and that's the purpose of Workstream 1. The second point I want to make is that the budget, to my way of thinking, doesn't really reflect the appropriate control point to the extent that the community wants to influence how ICANN does. The control point really should be the substance of what ICANN does and the priorities associated with the substances. The budget is a proxy measure, and sometimes it's used. It's used, I know, in the United States government. But I would encourage you to think of valuing the control point of the operational plan and not of the budget. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Next is Chris.
Thank you. I just want to check in with Jordan just to make sure that we are on the same page. And I agree with much of what George just said, but just to check we're on the same page, Jordan, what I think we're saying is that if you remove the 10% issue, then and ignore for the moment the way it's enforced, then, in fact, there is what the board's comments and what you're saying are at one. Is that, in effect, correct?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then in that case, I have a question, which is, have you considered and worked through the logistical challenges rather than the principal challenges of how you would in... It's not acceptable in my view to create a process that consistently leads to the budget having to remain in place over the end of the financial year because we're still faffing around trying to figure out if we can agree the new one. And the board and the staff worked extremely hard to A, up the community's input into the budget process in the last couple of years, and B, do it on time. So I'm just wondering if we've actually factored into the discussions that logistical issue that arises. And if so, I'm fine with it if we have. I just wanted to raise it as a point.
In terms of working with the financial staff to model through the steps in the process and the additional time that would need to be added to allow for a veto, no, that hasn't been done. But it also hasn't been done in the board comments either, as I understand it. So... that's a piece of work that ought to be done, needs to be done. But whatever the process that's involved, there's going to be a timing impact there, which is inconvenient. Part of the point of that, though, is that it increases the the pressure on the system to come out with the right budget first time. So.
May I just respond? Cool. The other question that arises from a logistical point of view as opposed to a principal point of view is how do you prevent the mechanism being used to block a budget line item that is that for one SO or AC? Is that something that you'll find that we are fine to have done? In other words, it's conceivable that you could block a budget line item that was a CCNSO expense, and that the others could gang up and block it. Are we fine with that, or are we not fine with that? And if we're not fine with that, how are we going to deal with that?
I think probably that's a matter for debate, but just the point we've said is that there isn't a line item veto. So if people want to do that kind of gang up on an SO or AC, by having an only whole of budget veto, there are consequences for them as well. Those consequences are lessened if you've got a plus 10% carryover. But I think the scenario you're talking about, for instance, is if the CCNSO adopted a new policy that the rest of the ICANN community didn't like, and the other SOs and ACs came together and said, if that's in the budget, we're going to block the budget. That's the kind of hypothesis?
Yes, and the response to you would be, yes, it is correct that there's a cost to me for blocking that, but that cost to me for blocking that is only if I also have new items in the budget that are relevant to me and that I want. So there's no cost to me if it's just a continuation of my existing budget. It doesn't matter to me in the slightest. I'm not trying to create an issue. I think there is an issue, and I think you guys need to work through how we're going to handle that. It's about threshold, really. And it's about considering how you would create your threshold, no matter what model you choose, to block.
Thanks, Chris. There's this gentleman over here. We haven't yet met, so you might want to introduce yourself, please.
Qusay Al-Shati, the GAC member of Kuwait, participating in the CCWTO meeting for the first time. Thank you. My concern with the budgeting is really referring to paragraphs 381, 379, and 382. Obviously, in paragraph 381, it says that the budget, after the approval of the board, can be vetoed by the community, and then the budget will be stopped. My interpretation is correct here, right? First, the veto process. I mean, I can understand that there is a president who can veto someone with an executive power who can veto, and yet there should be a process where this veto can be overruled. Because right now what we are looking at is a disagreement between the community and the board over the budget. There is no guarantees that the ICANN may stop function, will be dysfunctional because the budget has not been approved. What assurance we have that ICANN as an organization or the IANA as an organization will not dysfunction because the budget has not been approved. The budget means all, even the payment of the staff of the ICANN. That's my understanding of the ICANN budget. So right now, there is no guarantee after the approval of the board and the veto from the community over the budget that the organization will not stop functioning, because there is a halt in the budget process. And again, obviously in paragraph 379, because there is a concern over the IANA, they separated the issue of the IANA budget from the ICANN budget, because so if we disagreed on the ICANN budget, we don't want to have the IANA operation get affected. There is a possibility here that the ICANN as an organized or the IANA as a function will dysfunction because there is a disagreement over the budget. Yet, if someone, a veto cannot be by multiple persons, I mean, this is the first time I would hear that a community, any entity in the community can veto this budget or exercise the right of the power of veto without clearly defining when this right to be exercised and how it is exercised and who is in that organization has the right to say, I veto. This is a wide open question for me.
Okay, I suggest that we take some more interventions from the floor, and then, Jordan, you can maybe respond to them together. Next is Cavus, please.
Yes, I understand that the PTI budget is separated from the general ICANN budget. It's good. We have agreed to that. With respect to the ICANN budget rejections, when we discuss that level of working party, some of those very late time or night, so on and so on and so forth. In fact, there was some disagreement on the unlimited time of rejections. Imagine that we have to react on the third time and fourth time. How we implement that? The implementation is a very time-consuming issue. And I don't understand the logic that if the community reject the budget, why I can insist that they were right without any convincing reasons. If the reasons given by ICANN that they have to maintain the budget as they have proposed and the community reject that for the second time, I think logic permits that ICANN would reconsider its position because there is no hostility and fight between ICANN and the community. There are collaboration, cooperation. I don't see any reason why we have to go beyond two or maximum three. And I don't know why we need to put it in the ICANN bylaws because they have clearly mentioned previous year plus 10% maximum. That is sufficient. I have some difficulty, people sometimes talking of over-regulations, sometimes talking of normal regulation. This time we're going over-regulations. Let us limit it to two times, or if you want, three times, but not unlimited. It is impractical and difficult to implement. And it is not possible to block the operations of ICANN because of the communities having taken into account that any time that we want to reject, we have to have a formation of the group, either the CCWG always in session, we have to have formalities, we have to have too many things, so implementation would be difficult. Let us not go beyond the two or maximum three. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. Alan?
Thank you very much. With regard to the veto of the IANA budget separately from the other one, certainly people have expressed to me the concern of, since the IANA budget is implicitly part of the ICANN budget, how can you protect it if you veto the ICANN budget? Now, we've used words like ring fencing and things like that that don't mean a lot to most of the people reading this document. I'm told the accounting people can describe exactly how they do this. And I suggest we actually get words from the counting people and put it in to make it really clear that we're not just waving our hands and pretending it's something we haven't considered. Number two, with regard to Chris's concern about vetoing the entire ICANN budget to target a specific thing, we've already said that you can only do the community can only do a veto if the specific item that is concerning them has been raised in the earlier processes. So we know what a veto is for, even though it's vetoing the whole budget. We have in general said that you cannot exercise a power. When you're exercising power, you can't have a single AC or SO veto that power. So that does give the mechanism that Chris is concerned about and at large has said the same thing. But we could add a rule saying that you need the, you cannot, because we know which line item, it's not a line item veto, but we know which line item you're complaining about, we could make sure that it cannot be exercised by the ganging up process, should we choose that's appropriate. Thank you.
Greg?
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. I think going back to something being discussed a little while ago when I put my hand up, was the difference or similarity overall between the board's the power under the board's intervention or comment and that under our proposal. I think, you know, it seemed like there was maybe a little bit more disagree, a little bit more agreement on the similarity than was called for. I think, you know, as I wanted to bring back, I think what Rosemary said before we had our coffee with regard to the inherent power of a member to reject a budget versus the by inherent I mean statutory power of a member versus a power that is only granted in the bylaw, and which then could be balanced against an exercise of fiduciary duty by the board in deciding that they were not going to abide by the bylaw. So there is this, a fundamental difference we need to come back to with regard to the power or power balance between a member and a board versus that between any other type of grouping of entities and the board. We may decide, but we don't like the way that power balances. We've certainly had comments in that regard, but there are differences, and we can't ultimately pretend that they don't exist. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Seung?
Thank you very much. This is Seung for the record. I just want to ask the CWG chairs to clarify something in relation to the dependencies that CWG asked for as it concerns the budget. When the CWG said they want budget, that is, ICANN budget, to be subject to community approval, how does the CWG understand that? Does it cover IANA budget, PTI budget, and the overall ICANN budget? Because I noticed that one of the things that have been said is that we have to do what the CWG is dependent on as made mandatory. So we have to meet that their requirement. So what do you understand to be their requirement in relation to that? And when we say community approval of projects, it seems like we may never get an approval at some point. If we are actually saying that we should wait until we get a nod from the community on budgets, I think it's most likely impractical, especially in this community as ICANN. So I think it needs to be clear that approval is struck out one way or the other from the requirement. Veto can be further discussed, and the mechanisms of the veto can be further discussed. But I think approval is a very big word that we need to consider. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Eberhard?
Eberhard Lisse for the record.na. My view on this is that a big stick hurts much, is difficult to lift. A small stick doesn't hurt much, even if you use it often. This is all very complicated. I think if we have a way to, we must have one that takes a little bit of deliberation and then does what it wants to do, basically forces ICANN to do what the community wants. We are talking a lot about details of implementation here that I just don't see this happening. We're talking this proposal to death. Nobody understands it. Not even everybody inside this room understands it, but nobody outside this room understands it. This is what Secretary Strickling has alluded to, that our complication is overly complex in two of his blog posts. We should come. I'm all for a veto. I'm all for a budget veto. Don't particularly care about line items, but I don't like this 10% automatic increase. If we use a budget veto, it must sting. It must really force ICANN to consider. That said, it must be of such a high burden for us to implement, to use that stick, that it's not overused. And we need to find a balance on this.
Thanks, Eberhard. George?
Thank you. George Sadowski for the record, and also everything I say is my own personal opinion. I'm not representing the board in any way. Very quickly, I know that the budgetary requirement was imposed by the CWG, but I think it's reasonable to ask whether or not this is a condition for successful transition. It seems to me that it isn't, and I'm not sure quite what should happen, but it should be examined. Secondly, there is an issue of support for this. I hear a lot of concerns about it. I don't hear a lot of support for it. I know it's in the proposal, but I'm questioning whether how solid that support is. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Chris, and we're going to close the queue after Chris, please.
Thank you. Just to pick up on what George said, it is correct that there is a budget requirement of the CWG, but the budget requirement of the CWG is a requirement to protect the IANA budget. And in fact, a number of the members of the CWG are uncomfortable about the, as has already been said by Jordan, uncomfortable about the fact that the CCWG is creating a veto, et cetera. The second point I wanted to make was just to pick up on what Greg Chatton said. I want to make a very clear statement of my own personal view that I'm extremely uncomfortable having budget decisions made by any body, ultimately, that does not have a fiduciary duty. It concerns me enormously that you would have a situation where you're dealing specifically with the corporation. There are clear requirements and so on. So I'm very uncomfortable with that, and I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. So Cavus has raised his hand after I had closed the queue, so has Shireen. I'd like to ask Jordan to take stock of what we've heard and respond to the issues, and then we might get back to the two of you.
Thanks. That's a really useful set of feedback. If I could just, can I just run through and make some responses to the people individually? So the points that you raised about there being no kind of crisis if the budget isn't approved is dealt with by the fact that there is an ongoing budget that's provided for in the proposal. So if the budget is vetoed under the model, the previous year's budget continues in force. So there's no question that staff will not get paid. There's no question that ICANN won't meet its financial commitment. There's no question and no possibility in any of these models of the corporation descending into chaos. So that's definitely dealt with. I just want to put that there clearly. Cavus, on your point, there is a limit of 2 vetoes proposed already for the budget, and I haven't heard anyone suggesting we increase that limit. So I think that that's already there. The CWG did tell us that this proposal does meet their requirement. So if we were to change it, we would need to cross-check with them as to whether it still did. On the kind of related points of fiduciary duty and members' rights there, Chris, we structured this power very carefully so that it didn't see the community mechanism making budget decisions. That's why it's explicitly not a line item veto, and why the only thing that this power contemplates is returning the budget to the board, which is the decision maker with the fiduciary responsibilities, to make to reconsider its position in light of the veto and to make further budget decisions. So,
and why do you need enforcement? If that's the case, I don't understand the point that Holly and Rosemary were making earlier on about the difference in the enforceability mechanism. If the ultimate decision is the board's, then I don't understand why there is a concern about the ability to enforce. Because what Rosemary and Holly were saying is direct enforcement for the membership model, indirect enforcement for the mem, the indirect one being board spill. So I don't understand. Doesn't make sense of what you just said.
Well, I'm not responsible for what Holly and Rosemary were saying. But I think the point is that what would be enforceable in the budget power in the terms that we drafted it would be that the caretaker framework that was in place would be one that was determined in the bylaws, and that would stick. So no one could take a case that said the board has to override what's in the bylaws to give effect to their fiduciary duty. That that response wouldn't be available to the community. Now, I can't see the lawyers. I can't see whether they're nodding or not. And Rosemary's got it. Yeah, Rosemary is nodding to that. So maybe that's the thing that we could tease out a bit more later. The other point I'd like to raise, which wasn't raised by anyone, is we've said all of these community powers require a discussion in the ICANN community forum. So with the budget, not only would the issue have to have been raised in the consultation process that leads to the budget, but before a veto is exercised, there has to be a community-wide discussion, at which point the board will be explaining its logic, at which point the SOs or ACs that have petitioned for the power to be used will be explaining their concerns. There'll be another dialogue stage is already in this before a first veto gets exercised, so I just wanted to keep that in mind. I'll just come finally to George's point about whether this is a condition for the transition. I think we should ask that question of all of these powers, but workstream one for this group isn't things that are required to tick boxes to allow the transition to occur. Workstream one, as per the charter, is to, you know, to provide a situation of accountability that the community is comfortable with after the transition has occurred. That's the mandate that we were given. So there may be things that go beyond a narrow technical, this box must be ticked to allow transition. This is one that's received solid support in the context of the two sets of public comments that we've got. And the concerns have not been about the principle, they've been about the operational impact and the implementation of it. Thomas.
So Cavus and Shireen had both raised their hands. Can you keep it very brief, please? Cavus and then Shireen.
Yes, as the liaison of ICG, we have mentioned that any model or any approach taken by CCWG need to meet the requirement of CWG, which is mentioned in paragraph 106, saying that if these conditions are changed, they will review the whole situation. So it is a fundamental and should not be changed. And moreover, in GAC, when we agreed to the, as a charter organization, to this process, we have cross-referenced this condition. So it is essential and fundamental and cannot be changed. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Shireen?
Yes, so I'd like to go back to the unintended consequences, if I may be allowed. The annual budget is linked to the annual operating plan. The annual operating plan is linked to the 3 to 5 years operating plan and strategic plan. So vetoing the budget maybe is only a financial issue about money, but in reality has a lot of other consequential events, and that is you're really vetoing the long-term strategic plan because every year it has an operating plan, and we will freeze that operating plan because you cannot implement it if the budget corresponding to it has been frozen. Secondly, if you freeze the budget, and under the what I heard this morning, what is being proposed in a single membership model, the board's fiduciary responsibility are being relieved, and no one is really accountable for the consequences. The unintended consequences would be things like, as a result of the freeze of the budget, what happens if the reserve fund is depleted over time, and ICANN doesn't have sufficient funding to pursue a legal case? What happened if there are losses at the end of the year? What happened, I can give you many examples. Who is actually responsible? Because the board has put a budget that it feels comfortable and is accountable for, and yet you have frozen that budget and frozen the operating plan. So who is accountable for the consequences of those?
John, would you like to respond?
Just briefly, I think that the disruption to the operating plan isn't an unintended consequence of a budget veto. It is the intended consequence of the budget veto. The budget veto is designed to cause a correction to something. You will know what that something is because of the fact that the veto can only be exercised on something that's been raised in the consultation that is done before the board approves the budget. So this is an escalating series of exchanges in this budget planning process. If in determining the annual operating plan and the budget, you get strong feedback from the community that it doesn't want something there, and the board perseveres with it, and if there's a veto, It's the board that's caused that disruption by ignoring the community's input. On the point of fiduciary responsibility, if this mechanism said, if the community vetoes the budget, it then is going to write up its own budget and put its own line items in and change the spending allocations, that would be an unworkable monstrosity, but that would really disrupt the fiduciary responsibilities of the board. I say what I said back to Chris. When a budget is vetoed and sent back, that isn't suspending board members' fiduciary responsibility to create a workable budget. That responsibility does rest with the board in all circumstances. That's why this is a whole-of-budget veto. The board can't get around those responsibilities because they're inherent in being a board member. What the membership model would do in this case is say that the act of vetoing it doesn't, you know, the board can't set that aside by claiming it's exercising its fiduciary responsibilities. It's a very, very, very narrow intervention. And I can't really express it any better than that. The lawyers are better at explaining that fiduciary point than I am.
Yes, we have Mark, who hasn't spoken to this issue. Mark, you came in after I had closed the queue as well, but nonetheless, you know, if you could keep it brief, please.
Yes, thank you, Mark Carver, UK government. I'll try and be brief. I just wanted to pick up on the point about community discussion, the phase that is envisaged after a period of engagement in consultations with the board, which many stakeholders may have been able to do, but the GAC, I can't really see that being an activity or focus of concern for the GAC in terms of, you know, the budget and how it's evolving and developing, and particular lines of funding are being finessed. But at the community forum stage, you would need quite a bit of time for that exploration of this issue of a contest over the budget. And I know we're going to come on to talk about the community forum later in the agenda, but I just flagged that, as you know, it's an instance where community discussion will be important, but many in the community will probably be coming at that issue pretty fresh, the budget issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. So what we're going to do with this is we're going to take the comments that we heard today in our debrief session, and we will come back with a suggestion to move forward. Right? I think we can't resolve this now, or at least it would take too much time with the whole group, but we will sit back and come back during this two-day session to the group and make a suggestion. Jordan, let's then briefly touch upon the other community powers before we move to the community forum, please.
I don't think I should take your time by saying much on any of the other powers. In terms of dealing with the standard bylaws, the fundamental bylaws, the removal of individual directors and the recall of the whole board, you'll have all seen the public comment summary that came through. There's been a question in terms of removing individual directors a couple of times, whether that should be the appointing body or whether it should be broader. And so that might be something that people want to pick up on. But I think it's probably, given the amount of time we've taken on the budget one, it's more useful for us to get any particular points that group members as a whole want to raise about any of the other powers than for me to summarize anything.
Yes, why don't we do that? Does any one of you want to speak to a specific issue on the other community powers? Chris?
Yeah, I just want to raise a topic and see if anybody wants to talk about it. We made some suggestions in respect to the complete board removal mechanism, suggesting that once you get past a certain number, you are in effect removing the whole board, and that therefore a higher threshold should apply to removing a number of individuals than would apply to removing a single individual, if you see what I mean. And I'm interested in what people think about that as a concept, because we put that in our proposal. So in other words, if you say for the sake of discussion you have 16 board members, you could remove 14 or 15 of those individually using the individual mechanism, which might have a threshold of, let's just say, 60%, or it might be only a vote within each SO and AC, if that's the way that the agreement ends up being, consensus ends up being. And that is, in effect, removing the whole board. And if the whole board had to be removed and their threshold was, let's just say, 75%, then that's a different kettle of fish. So our suggestion was there's a tipping point where you would say you are, in effect, removing the whole board. And I'm interested in what people think about that.
Suggest we hear Alan first, and then we turn it over to John.
Sorry, I was responding to that. I would have absolutely no problem saying there's a minimum number of board members you must leave, or you must have a higher threshold to go below it, or invoke the whole board rule or something like that. I think that's completely reasonable, as long as that threshold is significantly less than half the current board.
Thanks, Alan. Jordan?
I'm just trying to think about how you'd implement that. I think our proposal said that for individual SOAC removal, you'd need to get to 75% within that SOAC. And it said for the removal of the entire board that it would have to be 75% of all of the available votes in the community mechanism. So that is a higher threshold. I don't know how you would coordinate a variable threshold. So if you said if the CCNSO is going to remove Chris and Mike because it was sick of them, and if the GNSO is going to remove their two directors, and if the ASO is going to remove its two directors, how do you, first of all, there's a big problem going on if all that's happening at the same time, and probably people are going to move to remove the whole board anyway, but what is the practicality of this differential threshold thing? I don't quite know how you'd achieve that. So.
Thanks, Jordan. Sebastian? Then.
Yes, thank you. Sebastian Bachelet. I am not sure that we will solve that in discussing here with this whole group, but there were some proposals in the first draft on the table, and it was never really discussed. I just want to come back with my proposal, is that we need to find a way that it's not a single SOIC who decide, and that it could be done between one and X board members, and handle it that way. Because if we have trouble with one board member, then we take care of this board member. If we have trouble with more, then we take of more. Knowing that, as you know, each year there's a possibility to have each year five new board members. And then the question of how you have the majority of the board change in 1 year, it's quite easy. You don't need to have all the board spill, because it will create, from my point of view, if we use that, it's the end of ICANN. And we can still discuss, yes, it's a nuclear option and it will never happen. Even if we think about it and we start, from my point of view, ICANN is dead. And if it's what we want, yes, let's continue to do that. And I'm all for the ban of nuclear weapons. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. Kusai?
Thank you. I think I can understand, for example, that a specific member or a misconduct done by him, he will be recalled. A representative of an SO or an AC who did not act on the best interest of his group may be recalled by his respective group. But removing the entire board, I mean, ICANN is responsible for the day-to-day, the resilience, the stability of the Internet. Removing the entire board, that means a vacuum in this organization. And it will be a vacuum in this organization. This is a practical measure. We cannot afford, because a disagreement between a community and a board will be removed, and suddenly the day-to-day operation of the Internet has been affected because of a vacuum in the organization. Yet, this is dangerous. This is a dangerous tool. First, we introduce a sole membership organization that reduces the accountability to only the SOs and the ACs, basically. And then, me as a community, two organizations or three can agree to recall their directors, and suddenly I am in a position to remove the entire board because I'm in a disagreement. Not because of a misconduct of the board, not because of a breach of a bylaw, not because of something like a fraud or it's just because of a disagreement. Eventually, the way it is mentioned here, this is like acting on based of, and this is a possibility to door to remove the board based on an interest. Based on that, if the board, for example, took a decision that's not in the interest of a specific group or some communities, and orienting the organization toward the interest of a specific group, or basically hijacking the organization. It is dangerous to say remove of the entire board. I can understand that an SO or an AC want to remove their director in the board. Yes, but the entire, I think this is a dangerous thing.
Thanks for that. Let me just clarify briefly before we move on with the queue that in order to invoke this community power on removing the whole board, you need a higher threshold than for the individual board director removal, as well as the voting threshold is substantially higher. And then when the community power is invoked, there is the need for every organization to name a replacement director so that there is a caretaker board instantly to allow for seamless operations. I mean, that's not as good as having continuous operations. That's understood. That's what's been called by the nuclear option by some, but it was felt necessary that with a higher threshold that the community must have the possibility to remove the board for if there are wrongdoings. Next in the queue is Greg, and I'd like to close the queue after George.
Thank you, Thomas. Greg Shatton for the record. Thomas, you made two of the points I was going to make, so I'll just make the last one, which is that I personally don't believe that the community, you know, would exercise this lightly. This is a, you know, recognizably a crisis, something that would only be done in a time of crisis. There would need to be, you know, multiple significant failures that would need to lead us to the point where removal of the entire board made sense. You know, given that it is an incredibly disruptive situation. But it does happen from time to time. I think there are people in this room who may even be involved in organizations where it has happened, and it's happened for good reasons for the future of that organization. I think that ultimately it comes down to maybe trust, again, that word that George has supplied, which is an important thing to keep in mind. Do we trust the community to act on such an incredibly powerful power in a way that is, you know, for the good of the Internet, for the good of the broader community? And if we don't, then everything is in trouble. This room is in trouble. ICANN is in trouble. The community is in trouble if we are that untrustworthy. So there may be issues of how to ensure that we are that trustworthy. It's nice to say trust us without showing why you should. But then again, that could be said for any group that's saying trust us. So we do have work left here, but I am, you know, not one that is terrified of this power. I believe it would be exercised only in times when it was truly necessary to do so. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Sebastian?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. Go ahead.
It was exactly my point. No, yeah, but don't forget where we are. There are already power. The board, if one board member get into trouble, the board have facility to act, and the selection body cannot re-elect a guy. It's happened sometime. Then, because the lady were not elected by yet. But SOAC is except now. We don't forget that there are already power existing, that we are not inventing everything and need to have something without considering the current situation. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian. I feel compelled to make one point. The existence of the community power to spill the board, I think, is undisputable. It's been on the table in our first report. We got overwhelming community support for it. It's a CWG requirement to have this community power. So I guess what we should discuss today is whether we need to make any improvements to the process that has been spelled out that we have in the report. And I see that the queue is getting longer and longer again, although I had closed it after George. So in the essence of time, please check whether your comments are actually those that help improving or shaping the process as suggested. George, Cavus is next.
Before I speak, are we dealing with the removal of individual board member or other?
We had asked the group to speak to the community powers that they think they need to speak to.
I will concentrate on removal of individual board members. From the very beginning, I was not in favor of the removal individual board member by the designating authority of that board member. It is against the collegiality duty of the entire board, because the duty of the board is not only to satisfy the constituency that elected that, but to safeguard the interests of public. So I am in favor of the proposal of ICANN that removal of individual board members should be under the entire community power, but not a designating authorities. It is not constitutional, and it is not doesn't work, because one constituency may be not in favor of that, but other are in favor, so we should consult everybody, and that is why we were not at this. I was not in favor of the individual board member removal to the constituency that designated that, but to the whole community. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. George?
Thank you. George Sadowski, for the record. It is absolutely surreal that the removal of the entire board is demanded by the ICG. And the reason I say that is that if I were the IETF or I were the RIRs and things were going badly, the last thing I would do would be to spill the board. I would take my digital assets and go somewhere else, because we've worked carefully on a whole policy of separation, how the separation can be done, et cetera. And
George, it's a CWG requirement.
CWG.
CWG requirement.
Thank you. CWG, you're right, which obviously should be reflected in the ICG report, right? But CWG requirements. I would take my digital assets and go elsewhere. I wouldn't spill the board, and this came to me when Kusai was speaking. It's a very destabilizing event. Why should any of the three IANA customers put up with that? Why can't they go somewhere else? So I'm not saying that it shouldn't be done, but I think it's surreal that it's a requirement from the CWG, and maybe this is something that could be re-examined. Thank you.
Well, I guess it wouldn't be for us to re-examine that. It was my understanding that there was broad support inside this group and also from the community that a board spill must be in place. I'm not sure whether it's helpful for us to reopen that discussion that we had quite some time ago, but rather if there are wishes to tweak the process to lead to less destabilization of ICANN in such event, I think that's something we should take on board. Chris.
Thank you, Thomas. I'm with Greg here. I'm not terrified by the power at all. But I want to make it clear that my concern is that, and this is to a degree depending on what model you choose, but my concern is the fact that there is in effect zero recourse. You guys have, and this is supporting what Greg said, the CCWG has consistently made statements that, you know, it's not the current board that's the problem, it's the future road board that's the problem, et cetera, et cetera. And I would argue it's not the future, it's not this level of SO and ACs that's the problem, it's the future SO and AC the problem. And if you can't have it both ways. You've got to have some accountability mechanisms in place. It isn't enough to simply say, we make up the SOs and ACs and therefore what we say goes. You've got to be accountable. And that question doesn't matter about the model. That question does need to be dealt with. The moment you give people the power to do something as a group, the question then becomes, to whom are you accountable? And that question has not been answered and has not been dealt with. I'm not against the power at all. But it seems to me, as a simple example, there's been massive pushback. There has been a lot of pushback by people in the CCWG about the concept that you would have to show some sort of cause for why you would spill the board. Well, all we've been talking about in the last 20 minutes has been this would only ever be used in a crisis. Well, in that case, why not show cause? The fact there is a crisis means there's a cause. So I don't understand the resistance to putting in place. You want us to have us the board to have checks and balances in place, but you resist any check and balance to be put in place in respect to the community. I don't understand that. We're all part of the same community. So to whom are you guys, to whom are each of the SOs and ACs operating together going to be held accountable? And it comes back to the trust point. George has made it, Greg has made it. I agree.
Chris, to your point, if you think that we should add cause, I think our group has never resisted that. Give us examples of what should be put into a list of causes. I guess our group in its deliberations had said earlier that the threshold is so high that this decision can't lightly be taken, and that therefore we have safeguards in place that avoid from the community for the community to go rogue. But I see that, you know, more and more people are adding themselves to the list, and at the same time we seem to arguing about the overall existence of the power more than anything else. And we
not arguing about the overall existence of the power at all, just to be clear. I'm not arguing about it. I said I'm not terrified by it at all, and the board's position has been clear that we as a principle, we don't have a problem with it. I just want to say one thing, Thomas, seriously. You just said a very important thing. You said the threshold is so high, I can't understand why it would be a problem. Let me switch that around for a second. That is equally feasible for us to say, and the threshold for the board refusing something is so high, I can't see why it would be a problem. So, you know, the CCW doesn't seem to be prepared to accept from the board saying, we'll put in a high threshold, and because that threshold is so high, that you ought to be okay with that. Your response is, no, we need the ultimate power to enforce. But switching it around the other way, you're claiming exactly what you won't let us claim, which is you've got such a high threshold that it doesn't matter. So where's the equity in that? There isn't any equity in that.
So you're speaking to the underlying issue that we're going to discuss later on SOAC or community accountability, which actually should become some sort of shared accountability or mutual accountability.
I think, Chris, there's a fallacy of composition in the argument that you're making. The ICANN board is the governing body of a corporation with a budget of, what's the annual budget this year, Shireen? 100 million plus? 300 staff, control over the route of the internet in a very significant way, operating the IANA function. That is the body that's being held to account by these powers. And compared with that, the SOs and ACs, if this proposal is implemented as it is today, have some very narrowly scoped powers by which they hold that governing body with all of that resources and power and influence and responsibility to account. So it isn't right to say that the SOs and ACs or the community needs to be held to account in a symmetrical fashion. It's just, it's a non-starter. It's an illogical proposition. What we do need to assure ourselves of, and what has been proposed in the CCWG's proposal is that keeping the SO and AC framework in touch with the internet community open to new participation is very important. But if you're looking for some, you know, if you're looking for a way for the board to hold the community SO and ACs to account as a feature in the proposal, I don't understand what you mean. If you're looking for causes to be described in terms of exercising the community powers, personally I'm pretty relaxed about that. But I think that constantly raising who is the community accountable to is a kind of a weird concept here, because it's ICANN with the power, ICANN with the role, ICANN with the responsibility, ICANN that needs to be held to account.
Well, in that case, Jordan, I think we can say that we have a fundamental disagreement about the way that this model works.
I'm just checking now. You know, after I had closed the queue, seven people have added themselves to the queue. So we don't want to discuss AOC. We don't want lunch. So please keep it brief. You are not forced to exhaust the 2 minutes. Tijani.
Thank you, Thomas. You remember my position from the beginning was to merge those two powers. Steal the board and remove individual board members. It was first for simplicity, second because I objected to the removal of the board members by the appointing bodies, and I wanted it to be by the whole community, and also because I don't understand removing board members without reason. So if we merge them, if we accept those principles that the community is the one who will remove individual board members, the community can remove one or 15. So if there is a possibility to remove the whole board if there is a real catastrophe, a real problem. But don't forget that if we steal the whole board, it will send a very bad message. Not to to the ICANNers only, but also to the people outside ICANN. It will be the failure of the multi-stakeholder model. Thank you.
Thanks, but I think we need to agree at this stage that the community power is there. There is consensus on it. Let's talk, please discuss the processes. You know, this really takes us back 6 to 9 months in our discussions. We can start it all over again. I mean, if you want that, that's okay. But then we should kiss the transition goodbye, probably. Robin?
Thank you. This is Robin Gross for the record. I wanted to speak on the issue of individual board recall, which strikes me as one of the most fundamental and one of the most basic tools of means of holding people accountable that we have. The California Corporations Code is set up such that you appoint your directors, you can remove your directors. That is standard. It really isn't like we're trying to interject some great environment of lack of collegiality. I mean, this is the way the world works. You have to perform up to snuff or you are removed. And so I think it's really important that we hold on to, that we do not open up this issue again that was decided many months ago. I mean, you know, I understand the board doesn't want to lose their seats, but we have a lot of work to do today, so we should probably try to focus discussion on not reopening up these issues and trying to talk us out of it, and rather trying to come up with the processes that are best, that are most fair and best means of achieving the goals that we've already set ourselves out there for. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. Kusai, you are not in the Adobe, but you raised your hand.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to continue into the discussion or the issue that Chris raised, and who is the ICANN is accountable for? Okay. ICANN is not only accountable to its community. Actually, according to the formation of commitment, it's also accountable to the DOC. Actually, it is accountable to every single user of the Internet, the 3 billion Internet users today.
there is a whole social economical aspect of the internet they are also accountable for, and there are other players to that, and it is more serious accountability too. So reducing the accountability of the ICANN or the board only to the ICANN community is a limitation. And who says there is an agreement that of the powers of the community toward the board? There are some members of the community wants into that direction, but there is no total consensus in that. So the fact is, having the SO, the sole membership model, and reducing the accountability only to the ICANN community, this is not right.
Yes, and I guess that there's a misunderstanding there. We have acknowledged that we're going to work on SOAC accountability. The community does have redress with IRP. Aggrieved parties do have redress. But if you look at the public comment review tool after the first public comment period, there was overwhelming support for the board spill. We had interventions from board members as well as from FADI confirming that there is no resistance in the board for the community power as such. And I'd like to encourage us all to focus on how this process that we should accept as a fact to be in place can be improved. Cavus.
I said what I wanted to say in the chat. You should allow us to discuss. There is no problem that reopening. If we cannot reopen any discussion while we are here, take the common the proposal and put them together and say, we are here to discuss the issue. Removal of individual board member was not fully agreed because it is unconstitutional. Thank you.
Cavus, we're here to analyze the comments. We're here to refine our proposal. But I think we're not here to start the discussion from scratch and fundamentally question the community powers that have been established by this group more than half a year back. Shireen?
I personally have no problem at all with the removal of individual board members. The concern I have is the process that you've chosen by which to remove it. And that has been touched on by Tijani and by Cavus earlier. About the organization that has placed the individual has the power to remove the individual almost without cause. And in my view, this is going to create three unintended consequences which are going to be really harmful to the organization. The first one is going to create a very dysfunctional board because, in fact, you will be creating two classes of board members, those that will act almost in the sole interest of the constituency that has elected them, and those that will be freer to act in the collective interest of all stakeholders. The second unintended consequence is it will weaken the governance of ICANN generally, because the board deliberation and decision would be at risk of being driven to a large extent by subjective goals and personal compromise. And the third one, in the long term, it will create a negative change in board member behavior. Because the threat of removal without significant justification, in my view, runs the risk of having individual board members fear the loss of their seat if they do not adhere to the wishes of the organization from which they come. This could turn the board into a representative body or a parliament, i.e. a place where opposing interests clash and are reconciled, rather than the present situation in which all members are obligated to act as a body in the collective interest of all the organization. Thank you.
Thanks, Shireen. George?
George Sadowski, for the record. The board has said in its comments that it accepts the principle of spilling the board and removal of individual directors, and I agree that with appropriate justification, this is an okay thing. I would support it. I wanted to comment on what Jordan said a few minutes ago. He said that the proposal is giving the community only narrowly scoped powers. Narrowly scoped powers. You have the power to fire us, and you have the power to dissolve the organization under the current proposal. I don't consider that a narrowly scoped power. I don't even consider it a balance of power. I consider it a reversal of the locus of power in the community. Thank you.
Fiona?
This is Fiona Songa, for the record. I think when it comes to the issue of removing individual board members or the entire board, the biggest challenge there is in how we want to go about it, because there is a loophole that allows appointing SD or SO to just remove the board member. We should be clear that there has to be justification. And then even when we are having that transition period of when the board, an individual board member or the entire board is being removed, I think it's important that you have in the process a reseating mechanism, which means within each SC and SO, there would have to be a process where the appointing SC or SO reseats that seat as an emergency, like an emergency procedure of sorts. That gives the organization the stability that it needs to be able to continue with its operations. We, however, need to be cognizant of the fact that there is too often the removal of board members and reseating and reappointing and all that process is repeated a bit too often, then we are abusing the mechanism. And when there is abuse of the mechanism, there is a risk that sections of this, what we are calling the ICANN community, will seek for other ways to ensure that their needs as internet users and internet operators running businesses will need to be addressed. Basically, what I'm saying is there is a risk for some of us from the African continent, for example, to go to our governments and tell them this ICANN thing is not working and we want something else to work with. So what we need to do is to be able to look at, whether we like it or not, Thomas, we need to look at the process and to make sure that that process is simple and clear enough to be understood. Because if we internally are not understanding the process, then there is a problem. We will fight internally, we will eat ourselves, and everyone from outside will come and help us swallow each other. We need to put our thoughts together and just give it a bit more time and really make sure that we are at par with the process. What George had mentioned earlier, that yes, the numbers community has made sure it has kept all its policies and everything out of ICANN. We do a lot of all our work is out of ICANN, except where we need global consensus. What is there to stop us from moving with our numbers issues out to a different entity with the ITS and put our numbers outside and continue running our operations? We need to be, there is that risk that is likely to happen if we don't get our act together as an entire ICANN community. So let's give it thought and really make sure that we are able to be simple, clear, and accommodate everybody.
Thanks, Fiona. It's now 12:30, so we're due to have lunch now. So we will have to discuss the community forum and the AOC after lunch. But nonetheless, I think there were a lot of valuable points that were made. The leadership team will try to come up with suggestions how we can operationalize this. However, I think having listened to the discussion for the last hour or so on the community powers, the big difficulty is that we heard a lot about vague concerns, uneasiness with the process, fear about destabilizing, reputation of ICANN to the outside world, that people might go elsewhere. So if we want to address this, let's discuss concrete proposals that we can test in the room and see whether we can fix the concerns. And I haven't heard too much about that. And I think when we reconvene after lunch, let's try to discuss very concrete measures. So when we're talking about uneasiness with removal for no cause, come up with a list of issues that should be for cause. And let's put them in front of the group and see whether it gets traction. Or for if you have issues with individual board member removal by the designating organizations, we could ask for a second organization to second that. right? Whatever. Let's be concrete. Let's discuss concrete suggestions, alterations to the escalation path that we've suggested. And let's not limit ourselves or confine ourselves to vague criticism, because I think we really need to try to improve the proposal that we have. Jordan, as rapporteur, you were in the queue. I leave the final remarks on that to you.
I'll just try and be brief. One of the points that is an existential point for this is that I think people have assumed that it's legitimate to say the global internet community is out there, all the people who use the internet, and if they want to have an input into ICANN's very narrow slice of making the internet work, they can come and be involved through the ICANN SONAC system. So that's how you get involved in domain name policy making at the global level. You might be a user, you might be a non-commercial, you might be a registry, whatever. If that linkage is broken, then we can't solve ICANN's accountability through any ICANN internal process. There needs to be some external source of that accountability. But the whole point of this has been to end the external accountability link, to end the NTIA contract. So, you know, if the whole basis of the SOAC model is broken and that isn't a foundation for community involvement and accountability, then we might as well go to the beach. It's a sunny day out there. You know? So, because what we don't have time to do is to invent an entirely new infrastructure or system outside ICANN, which is going to hold it to account. That's really the only point I wanted to mull. The other point I want to make as a rapporteur is all of the arguments that have been raised today were raised in Buenos Aires, they were raised in Paris, they were raised in Istanbul, they were raised in Frankfurt. And at some point, we either have to crystallize and stop relitigating decisions that we've already made, or we need to go home as well. So I think we just need to think at lunch about how we advance, you know, towards a kind of final proposal, or whether we're not going to.
Thanks very much, and we're going to reconvene in an hour. Thank you.
Just a couple of notes. We will be reconvening in an hour. Lunch will be where we had the cocktail yesterday in the terrace, and there will be people in the room, so if you want to leave your things here, we've been told that it is okay. And 1 hour includes round trip to the lunch venue and back, so let's go.